Welcome back to the Roundtable. Our next guest's background is so fascinating, it's hard to know where to start. He's a prize-winning novelist, a playwright, a theater director. He is an actor. Cary Harrison was born in London in February 1944 during the World War II Blitz that rained down bombs on the city. His parents were stage and screen actors Rex Harrison and Lily Palmer. They brought him to Los Angeles when he was a year old, then to New York when he was five. He completed his education in the UK at boarding school and at Cambridge University, where he received an honors degree and a master's degree in English. For the past 17 years, he's been professor of English at the City University of New York. He lives in Woodstock. He has published several novels, including Richard's Feet, longlisted for the Booker Prize, and his latest is Who Was That Lady, which is actually several books, correct?
It is, Joe, and really nice to be back, may I say.
A delight to have you here.
It's now in ebook form. It's three volumes, like a Victorian three-decker.
Yes.
So I'm excited by that idea.
And if you want to read it in the traditional book form, it is in one complete...
It's in one immense
volume.
Tome. And I will show up at your home and autograph it wherever you are.
You're a very nice man. See, that's a very giving author. Well, welcome. It's so nice to have you back. I know the last time you were here, we were talking about a production you were in, so it's nice to have you here to talk specifically about the book. How did you come to this particular story in the sense that it is very far ranging? It is not, I think, typical. We'll say that.
Indeed.
And it's wide ranging and a lot of fun if you're ready for the ride.
You have to take the ride, and it's as Joe is indicating, a big ride. It had an unusual genesis, I must say. Sometimes you get an idea from a newspaper story. Sometimes something's been around in your head for a long time. This one was bizarre. I was at a party, and I noticed a middle-aged man come in, tall, fine head of hair, and I thought, what an interesting-looking guy. And I was standing with the host. I said, who's that man? And he told me the name, I imagine, which I've forgotten. I said, what does he do? He's a psychotherapist, I was told. I'm very interested. I said, what kind? And my host said he didn't know. And for a moment, this held my attention, this splendid-looking fellow. And I'd written so many psychotherapists in plays and novels. Indeed, there's one elderly lady who was a pupil of Freud's who's been in three novels of mine. Bless her. I can't stop her speaking in my head. So I suddenly was imbued with a whole new idea. Why not stop writing about Freudians and invent an entirely new form of psychotherapy, one that no one would ever have thought of before? This seemed an appropriate challenge, like, how am I going to do that? And I saw the ending of the book in my head. I didn't know it was going to be a long book, but to get there, this man's life, it turned out, to my amazement, takes us to the East, takes us into France, a good deal in France, and I was taken on a roller coaster ride that I wasn't expecting, and it was very exciting.
I'm going to make a comparison to science fiction in the sense that you are creating your own world. You're creating a new language. You're creating a new vocabulary. You are creating a new school of thought.
Oh, I appreciate your saying that, because I felt I did have to do that to be convincing. And when it came to describing what this therapy was, I felt that I could see a mental cliff face extending above me. I thought, how am I going to climb this? Can I get to the point of convincing my reader that this is real? And in the book, the new form of psychotherapy, a kind of shamanism which uses ancient Stone Age cave art, It spreads successfully through the world, and I have to convince my reader that it might have done so and become fashionable. A few people who've read the book have actually suggested that perhaps a school of psychotherapy could be born from it. And maybe I should put out my shingle and try and practice.
Give it a shot. See what happens. Yes. And this is and while all of that is new, there is very much a time-honored story of a doctor who is trying to save other people's relationships, and meanwhile needs to take some of his own advice.
It's true, and I think the smarter you get, the stupider you get, by some strange equation that I don't know why that happens, but it's like the light shines on one area and then it goes dark on the other one. And in his case, his own life keeps surprising him. I guess my life has done the same. And it's fun when characters think they know everything and patently don't. So he is astonished by the revelations that come in his love life. And this keeps him going in an increasingly alarmed state because he just doesn't know what's going on.
In writing a story like this, and it's a sprawling story, and you bring us to many locales, and you bring us to many places and times, and I'm interested of, since you are creating something, of what research goes into that and how much you want it to ring true.
That's such an important question for me. I borrow from my own experience. I have some experience of the Far East, but not of all the places in the Far East that are visited. And often I find that invention comes up with the sweetest ideas, the ideas that most closely belong to the book. When you're researching, you come up with nuggets. But they're not the book's nuggets. They're life's nuggets, reality's nuggets, history's nuggets. And in order for the nuggets that the book wants to find, that will hold the book together, to come into existence and find their way onto the page, you actually have to terrify yourself into inventing them. So often I've sent my characters to places that I haven't visited. Nowadays, photographs are so easily available of almost every corner of the globe, and they're so fruitful for a writer to imagine more, that kind of imaginary research is very available now, and I have availed myself of it.
When you did you realize from the very beginning that this was going to bring you to several layers?
I had an idea of where it was going, and it was an alarming prospect, because without offering any spoilers,
right.
I wanted to create somebody, a man of extraordinary insightfulness, who completely loses sight of reality. And so I knew that I was going there. I knew that I was going to an alarming place. I had no idea how I would get there. And I've been advising other people, fellow writers, younger writers, for years to let go of the sides of the safety of the plan for their book and let it follow its own nose. It took me an awfully long time to have the courage to follow my own advice. But when I finally did take it, I found I was going in directions that were much truer to what I wanted to write than when I had laid it all out, knew where I was going chapter by chapter. So I had to start from nothing, and I found myself in Paris. I found my character with a Russian dancer mother, and I was happy because my mother wasn't a Russian dancer and I wasn't raised in Paris, which made it much easier for me to begin and let the book find its own way. From there, it took me on a ride.
Mm. You know, as I said in the introduction, you throughout your life, you've been on quite a ride.
I have. I've been very fortunate. And when I look back, I can't quite understand how I was able to sustain that ride, if only sustain it financially. I think, how did I get myself to Morocco in 1984? When I look back, where did I even find the airfare? But life has allowed me to tumble in different directions and through different disciplines and interests. And I think, as a novelist, you're lucky if that's what happens to you.
How much of your parents' success were you a part of, in the sense of witnessing how they were relating to what was happening around them?
I think I saw a lot of it. As a young child, it didn't mean anything particularly to me, nor even to my peers, my school friends, who, when we were young, it when you're young, it doesn't mean anything, and fame doesn't mean anything. But as you grow up, You see the effects. I had extraordinary people at the dinner table telling the best anecdotes you've ever heard. I was usually sent out of the room for the payoff line because most of them were not fit for the ears of young children.
Little body, sure.
Little body. And I wonder sometimes whether I haven't spent my life trying to write those missing punchlines to catch up with what I missed. And they were remarkable storytellers, and I think that was inspiring. Less inspiring was what fame seemed to bring to people. It seemed to be more of a disease than a reward in terms of how it affected their lives. And it wasn't something that I set out to emulate. And I've been lucky to pop in and out of the shadows in my life in the nicest way.
Did and if this is too personal a question, I certainly understand. But do you feel that in your, at least in your father's case, that it was a disease that he caught, or was it something that more of an addiction that he wanted?
That's so interesting. I think people do want it, and it's almost impossible to legitimately not want fame. We may imagine that we'd rather avoid it, but when it comes to our door, it's quite hard to look away. And nobody could blame actors particularly for wanting the world's attention. And then afterwards, I think you find how much it limits your spirit. You're caught by the strange virus of fame, and then you become, I think, less than yourself as time goes on, or at least that's what I saw.
Do you see your dad as your dad, or do you still, you know, because you were sent off to school and so forth, that you saw your dad as Rex Harrison?
I see him very much as my dad. I adored him, and he was a very shy man, which is not something that people would necessarily identify with any actor, and not especially with him either. So I'm very conscious that I never really knew what he was thinking. This is not because he was a famous actor. It was in the nature of his personality that he was shy. He was very sweet and kind to me. But as I say, I wanted him to open up, as I guess many sons would like their father to open up, and of that generation, that was asking right. An awful lot. I was raised by a dangerously troubled stepfather, my mother's second wife, who was, he's no longer with us, a paranoid, schizophrenic, bipolar sufferer. And he, who I also adored, it was visible. Every single emotion he felt was visible. I knew exactly how he was feeling all the time. And that was a different kind of affinity, a different kind of love was inspired by that. But in my father's case, yes, I very much saw him as my dad.
So you have, I mean, obviously we didn't have the terminology of bipolar at that point. And so you are looking at this now, and how much did you identify it as a mental illness? And bringing it back to the novel, I assume that somehow plays a role in why you are interested in psychology and what is going on in our heads.
It does, very much so, because he came into my life when I was 12. And at that time, there was no sign of manic depression. I certainly didn't know at that age that his father had been manic depressive and had killed himself, as alas, many do. And so I didn't know the family history and that genetic factor that might if I'd realized, or if my mother had realized, was leading perhaps down that path. And it was later, when I was 17 or 18, he had a crisis, and it became very clear. And it did make me very aware of how the troubled mind works and how its effects on other people. And happily, because I loved him greatly, it was a fruitful relationship, even when he was in a very extreme state. I identified tremendously with him. I think perhaps novelists are like therapists in this way. Their patients, or their characters, in the case of a novelist, are acting out things that they hope they will never feel called on to act out. And yet, the identification is enormous, and the desire on the therapist's part or on a novelist's part to be able to identify with the most extreme behavior seems to me a part of the calling.
Being part of the calling, can you be a novelist, a playwright, a theater director, and an actor without going through some form of therapy in your life?
I wonder if you can. I've liked to feel that I've tiptoed through that minefield and have been... I loved it when friends were extreme in their behavior. Most of my life, I've been the person who carried the drunk home, rather than was equally drunk or even more drunk than my friend.
But calm in the storm.
Yes, it seemed to me I was called on to be there, to be the witness, to be the helper, to be the designated driver.
Lucky you.
Really. No, but I never minded because I don't drink much. And this has been a happy role. Somebody has to see it all and tell the story, and I think I felt called to do that.
In telling this story, I assume you have other stories to tell. Are you always working on a novel?
Yes, I am, and I thought that that this one would I could take a rest because it's so large and it's so long.
And so when we're done reading it, you'll be ready for the next one.
Oh goodness! Well, I threw everything into this one that I could possibly think of, as I did with an earlier novel that you mentioned. It was like I threw everything, and so I would be totally emptied out. But mysteriously, an even larger project came to mind. It's appallingly large. It's an intertwining of 5 300-page novels, and you read them more or less in alternate chapters because they start to bleed into each other. A project I never knew I was going to come up with, appallingly long, as I say, and yet I'm so happy at this time of my life to be presented with new Everests.
Well, it is, it's marvelous. It is called Who Was That Lady? And Kerry Harrison is the author. And as he said, you heard him on the program. He'll just come to your house and sign it if you want him to.
Flat out.
Yeah, just let him know. He'll come on over.
Joe, thank you.
Lovely tea. And Kerry, it is a great pleasure to spend time with you as always. I love talking to you, and I love reading your work, and I thank you very much for spending time with us.
Oh, thank you, Joe. You're a remarkable artist in your own job, and we're all aware of that and grateful for it.
Very sweet of you. Thank you very much. Kerry Harrison's new novel is Who Was That Lady? You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.